The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have an exciting program prepared for you today. Quite a few clips. We've got some sound from Boris Johnson here in the UK, a phone call that he made to Joe Biden this week. So that's some interesting insights, as we'll hear a little bit later, if we have time, because as I say, we have lots and lots of clips to get to. But everyone's on board, as I said earlier this week. I mean, this is a worldwide phenomenon. The media spoke Saturday night, and everybody, just everybody, worldwide, they surrender to the mob. The pressure is so intense. And the pressure being put upon Donald Trump at this moment to concede, the pressure to concede, it's almost overwhelming. There's a poll from MSNBC. 79% of people believe that Biden won, and only 3% believe that Donald Trump won. Another very, very accurate and precise poll. 79-3. It's like the polling right before the election. Wisconsin, Biden was ahead by 17 points. And they say with a straight face, they want for you to believe that you are all alone and that to stand up against the mob, it's you alone against the mob. Bernie Sanders yesterday, he said that President Trump is delegitimizing American democracy. Representative Clyburn, he said that by not throwing in the towel, the president is behaving like, you guessed it, Adolf Hitler. Another reference to Hitler, another comparison to Adolf Hitler. That's one of the favorites out of the Democrat playbook. Adam Schiff, he said, imagine if this happened in another country, a leader refusing to concede, alleging fraud without evidence, resisting a peaceful transition of power. We would condemn it. We would condemn it. Now, yesterday, right at the end of the program, we went through a little imaginary scenario of our own. Imagine if all of these accounts of voter fraud, all of this evidence, eyewitnesses, affidavits, these are witnesses giving sworn testimony, and then all the other things associated with this very unique election. America's never seen anything like it. Imagine if all of this was going on in other nations, and maybe a nation in sub-Saharan Africa. What would we think? And then for all of these people to lecture us on conceding, as soon as the media says the race is over, these people, like I said to you yesterday, these people come from a party that in some cases still hasn't conceded after years. You go back to Al Gore, you go back to Hillary Clinton, Stacey Abrams. That's just routine. That's a matter of routine for the Democrat Party. If you lose, particularly if it's a close race, you know you were cheated. You know it was stolen. These are the words they've been using for 4 years. This president's illegitimate. This president stole the election in 2016 with the help of Vladimir Putin. We were cheated, they have said for years. And now, pivoting on a dime, they say, how dare you? How dare you suggest that there was foul play here? How dare you suggest that this might have been rigged? Even the Republicans, so many of them. Karl Rove, he comes out of the Bush camp. This is the establishment. He's from Fox News. He speaks for Fox. He speaks for the Republican establishment. He speaks for Romney. He speaks for the Bushes. He speaks for the McCains. And they all agree. He had a Wall Street Journal opinion piece yesterday. I guess it appears in the printed version of today. This election result won't be overturned. So you might as well give up. You might as well throw in the towel. Even some of the president's staunchest supporters. There was a story yesterday in the Dallas Morning News. The Texas pastor, Robert Jeffress, he said that Biden's victory was a bitter pill to swallow. And that while the result isn't official, it appears that he won. It looks, just like my father wrote on Monday, it looks really bad, boy. Look, if you believe the media, of course it looks bad. They despise this president. They wanted him to leave last week. They wanted him to leave 4 years ago. They wanted him to leave after the unjust Mueller investigation, or during, anytime before it, during, after, whenever. Ukraine, impeachment. What did my father say in 2018? This was in the Saving America article. He said, for 8 years under President Obama, the forces of the radical left were on the march, virtually unchecked. Nobody would stop them. Nobody would stand up to it. All these Republicans, and they're so quick to criticize the president. Oh, he's damaging democracy. He's damaging the electoral process. And my father said in 2018 regarding the Obama movement, even Republican leaders caved in. And that was after they had taken control of Congress and had a lot of power to stop the president. Even when they had the power, they caved in. They got caught up in the swooning. Everyone was swooning before Barack Obama. Everyone worshipped him. Can you imagine, just for a second, this is a little bit of an aside, but we've gone through that this week. Can you imagine any newscaster in the universe cutting off Barack Obama and saying, hang on a second, no evidence. I mean, Barack Obama lied. He did lie on occasion. There were even the left-wing media. Think about Obamacare and all the promises he made. When did they ever interrupt him and say, you know what, we're going to have to break in here, people, because there's no evidence behind what he's saying. Never happened, did it? Not once. Now, like I said yesterday, it's just, well, that's just what they do. If you're representing the Trump campaign, whether it's Kayleigh McEnany or Donald Trump himself, even the president himself, they will shut him down. This is where we are. My father says, Donald Trump has proved himself willing to take a stand where others have not. It's quite something to behold him resisting these anti-American forces. He has inspired a few other leaders to challenge the radical left and to help expose it. We talked about this point yesterday. To expose it for what it is. He's inspired a few other leaders. But boy, there's not too many of them. Mike Pompeo earlier this week. What are you doing to prepare for the transition between Donald Trump and Joe Biden? Well, I think there will be a smooth transition to a second Trump term, he said. And then he comes under a fierce attack. How could you say this? How could you act like he's going to go on for a second term? The results are in. We've made the decision. I want to take you back a few days. I think I saw this maybe Monday night. This is Cheryl Atkinson. She, the Obama people spied on her. They tampered with her computer. And she fought back. Now she's kind of on the fringe as far as journalism is concerned or reporting goes. Her book, I have the title of it later on here, The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What We See, control what you see, what you think, and how you vote. That's a book from several years ago. Yeah, they want to even control the way you vote. They want to control the vote. Who was it that said? It doesn't matter how many vote, it's who's counting the votes. That's what matters. It's Lenin or Marx, one of those communists. If you've got control of the counting process, then you control the vote, pure and simple. And that's what we've seen happen in these major Democrat crime machines in Philadelphia, in Detroit, in Milwaukee, in Atlanta. And this is something they've been doing for years. It's just that this time it's on a mass scale and everybody in America sees it or saw it last week, some of it. When it was happening in California leading up to the 2018 election and the Republicans had those leads in something like 20 seats, I think it was. And then over the next 3 weeks, after everyone thought, well, the election's over, one after another, those seats were flipped as they brought in more mail-in ballots, as they harvested more ballots coming out of nowhere. Sam saw a story yesterday from the middle part of California. This Republican who surged to the lead after they were counting some absentee ballots. He's up like 3,000 or 4,000 votes now. And what did they do? This was already days after the election. And there's some of those congressional seats. They're still not decided because they're still trying to sift through ballots. And who knows when another box shows up. Anyway, this Republican surged to the lead and then they stopped counting. They just stopped. Well, we need to, the election officials say, well, you know, this is California and, you know, it's, you know, we have a lot of Democrats in this state. In fact, it's a single party state. So let's stop counting. And when we regroup and when we restart, we might see a different result. That's the way they work. This is the way they operate. This time they had to do it on the big stage, the national stage. So Cheryl Atkinson, the other night, it's one of these live Twitter feed videos where she's taking questions from some of her viewers, and she's talking about just how unique this election was in all the wrong ways, really, and how that we were prepared for this even months before the election. Here's clip two.
But one thing that should make us suspicious is, to me, we were primed for the scenario. A lot of pundits and analysts that were wrong about virtually everything else were right about one thing, uncannily, that months ago they said or they knew that on election day that Trump would appear to win the election, but they called it a red mirage. They said that that would fade away as the votes were counted. Well, now when you hear that, you say, that sounds reasonable. We knew that was coming. But if we hadn't been primed to accept that that would be the case, it would be very suspicious to us.
That's a fascinating point, isn't it? That we were primed for this. It was at the very outset of September. So 2 months before the election, Axios came out with the Red Mirage story. The New York Times picked it up and ran with it. CNN a few days later. And they, step by step, they went through this scenario that, I guess, accepting a few additional wrinkles, it pretty much played out last week the way they said that it would. Look, going into the election, there's going to be this red mirage. It's going to look like Donald Trump wins, but then just be patient. Be patient. It's going to go on for days. And as Cheryl points out, how could, when they were wrong, the media, when they were wrong about virtually everything else, how could they be so right about this? Because this was their strategy. They knew that no matter how many votes the president of the United States brought in, and he brought in a lot, it's 70-some million, 72, 73 million and counting, he increased his total from 2016 by 5-6 million votes. Sam was saying this morning, if you compare Barack Obama's landslide victory in 2008 And that didn't even get anywhere close to what President Trump got this year. But he declined. Barack Obama actually lost about 5 million votes from 2008 to 2012. This time around, President Trump was gaining momentum. He was gaining votes. It wasn't just a mirage. There was a wave. There was a wave of support. In fact, the actual mirage was the blue mirage. And that's still around. Unless you're rejoicing in the truth and seeing, as I've said so many times before, seeing what's right there in front of our eyes. It's open. Right out there in the open. A theft in broad daylight. And all of this evidence that just continues to pile high. She says, how could they get it just perfectly right on this one point? And yet they were wrong on everything else. Well, they were priming us for what they were intending to do on election night. And had they not done that, every American, having gone to bed with President Trump leading in all these states, would have awakened the next morning and thought, something is really fishy here. This doesn't seem right. This doesn't pass the smell test. As it was, you have a lot of Democrats, and really even they, you could look at it in the little grin that they had when they took to the podium in the case of Joe Biden last week or some of these Democrat operatives. They know. They know what happened here. They know that the Philadelphia machine was in full motion in the middle of the night. They know about the drop-offs of the Biden-only bundles. They know. They know what happened here. It would have certainly seemed suspicious had we not been prepared for this ahead of time. And the Democrat Party, their allies in the media, they all prepared us for this just 2 months before the election, the so-called red mirage. Here's what Cheryl Atkinson went on to say, clip three.
But there's reason for, in this unusual scenario and situation that's never before happened, for journalists to go in with a reasonable suspicion that maybe something either improper happened or something went wrong. And instead, we're getting this odd notion from so many reporters and analysts that the question shouldn't even be asked.
There's enough here for just a reasonable suspicion that, wow, if we've never experienced anything like this, maybe we should at least look into it. Instead, though, what have we seen? What are you talking about? You have no evidence. Even when there's hundreds and hundreds of affidavits now piling up, you have no evidence. And of course, more evidence is going to be uncovered as they get through with the canvassing process and the audits and all those that are coming up in some of these states. But instead, like she says, you're getting the president himself just cut off. We've got to interrupt this briefing here because like Shep Smith said, what the president's telling you there is simply not true. He can't even give his side. They won't listen to it. Atkinson says this is like Alice in Wonderland. That's the environment that we're in right now. Her book, The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News. They're working together. They're in bed together. And fake news control what you see, what you think, and how you vote. They controlled the vote, at least in these Democrat machines that have been rife with corruption for decades. This has been a problem that's been there for more than a half century. And President Trump and his team are working to expose it. I want to take you back to that Axios report from early September. They were talking here again. This is 2 months before election night, and they're discussing what was going to happen on November the 3rd. Here's clip four.
The reason we talk about a red mirage is, in fact, because we believe that on election night, we are going to see Donald Trump in a stronger position than the reality actually is. We are sounding an alarm and saying that this is a very real possibility, that the data is going to show on election night an incredible victory for Donald Trump.
It's interesting that he used the word alarm, and then the New York Times later, I think, it used the word doomsday scenario. I forget what Fareed Zakaria had to say, but he said it was some kind of a troubling scenario. They were sounding the alarm because they had to get the media ready. Now, make sure that you drag this out. Make sure you educate the viewers this year, because we're used to getting the results on election night, or at the latest in the early hours of the next morning. But now you've got to re-educate everyone. You've got to help them see that this is going to go on for days. It'll go on for as long as it needs to go on for Joe Biden to win. That was the playbook. That was the strategy. Now, we played this Axios clip on, I believe it was a September 3rd program. You can go back and look at the title of the program we had. That was 2 months before the election. The Dems' last hope, steal the election. This was their last hope. Never mind all the polls that you heard going into or saw going into the election. They knew Joe Biden was not the front runner. They knew they had to process a lot of fake ballots to pull this off. And I don't think they knew until election night just how many they'd have to come up with. And that's why so many of these scenarios, that's why so many of the ways that they cheated, it's almost laughable, as I noted last week. But that September 3rd program that we produced, again, the Dems' last hope, steal the election. Let me just play you the one more clip from Axios on September 3rd, clip 5.
When every legitimate vote is tallied, and we get to that final day, which will be someday after Election Day, it will in fact show that what happened on election night was exactly that, a mirage. It looked like Donald Trump was in the lead, and he fundamentally was not, when every ballot it gets counted.
That's Axios 2 months before. In fact, it will be just the opposite. How does he know? How does he know how many people are even going to vote? And for that matter, if you were looking at the statistics, the number of Democrats and Republicans that were sending in mail-in votes before Election Day, there were websites that were tracking that. Most states released that information. They didn't release, you know, who they voted for, but you can get a pretty good idea if you see that in Florida, they've had, let's say, 500,000 Republicans vote, and they've had 500,000 Democrats vote, and they've had 100,000 independents vote. And the thing of it is, and there were a few commentators, some few astute commentators coming into Election Day that said, if the Democrats are going to mail in their votes this year and Republicans are going to show up on Election Day, there should be a lot more Democrat mail-in votes tabulated to this point. As it was running, you know, about even. Maybe the Democrats had a little bit of a lead in some of those battleground states. I don't know. I'll have to get some of the statistics a little bit later. But there were commentators that were saying, if he has a chance in Florida, the Democrat turnout on Election Day is going to have to be a lot more than what many are projecting. Well, as it turns out, Florida had a pretty clean election, because that's what the leadership there has insisted upon as they've tried to clean things up the last few years. In any event, you come back to what this man just said. You heard it. It looked like Donald Trump was in the lead, and he fundamentally was not. That's a Democrat operative saying that he'll have a big lead on election night, but he will lose. You listen to what the Attorney General of Pennsylvania said or tweeted before the election. He will lose Pennsylvania. Now, there's a difference between some of those statements and just some of the ways that Donald Trump was talking about, look, we're doing really well. I think we're going to win I think we're going to win Minnesota. I think he was going around. He was seeing the support. He was seeing the rallies. And he was, as I played for you before the election, he was pretty confident. But how did these When they were so wrong about everything else, how did they get this so right? Well, this was their strategy. This was their last resort. This was their last hope. All those polls that said for months Biden was ahead, double digits. None of these Democrats that you heard or that you're hearing in these clips, they didn't believe that. They saw the same internal polling that the Trump camp did, and they knew Biden was way behind. And so they had this plan. Let me play you a clip from our program. This is 2 months before the election day. This is the show I just mentioned, September 3rd. This is clip 21. This is the last hope for the radical left to try to steal the election. And they're out there telling people, look, November 3rd, when it gets here, it may look like Donald Trump has won. It may even look like he wins in a landslide. But that's okay. Remember what Hillary Clinton said. Don't you dare concede, Joe Biden. Don't concede on election night. That's from our show 2 months before the election. Let me just remind you, we covered this again around that same time. This is how the New York Times followed on after the Axios piece. It says, what if early results in swing states on November 3rd show President Trump ahead and he declares victory before heavily Democratic mail-in votes, which he has falsely linked with fraud, are fully counted? So, again, there were a few additional wrinkles that we learned about, obviously, on election night. Nobody was talking about people just five states in unison deciding to stop counting. That's because they didn't, even they weren't expecting to be overwhelmed with people voting for Donald Trump. And so they just shut it down. They just stopped counting. But here again, as far as the framework is concerned, the New York Times spot on. And you'll notice, and you'll see this more with some clips I have from Van Jones, but you'll notice that not only did they predict the so-called red mirage or Donald Trump being way out in front and then the rest of the votes coming in to give Biden the victory, they also predicted that Donald Trump would contest it and point out that there's massive fraud going on here. This is the Times. It says, would the president, joined by allies of the GOP and the news media, sow distrust in the election by arguing that mail ballots that shift states away from him are rigged? The nightmare scenario, these are the words the New York Times used, the nightmare scenario in November is worth preparing for, many Democrats say. They had to prepare for this. Prepare for the wave of Trump support. Prepare the machines to churn out all of these fake ballots. And then prepare for Donald Trump and his allies. And we now see that there's not that many, certainly not that many in powerful positions, that is. He certainly has the support of ordinary Americans. But prepare for Donald Trump to contest it. Here's one more clip from our show back in September 3rd, 2020, clip 22. They know, as I said a week or two ago, Joe Biden is not the front runner. Never mind the polls. They know he's not the front runner. They know that Donald Trump is way out in front. And so they're preparing for the nightmare scenario. They're preparing for agitating, just like they've been doing all summer. They want to upend the system. And that would include the election system. That's from our show 2 months before the election. And the president, for his part, he was right on it as well, as you know from his campaign speeches. He was going around saying, look, they're going to mail in or mail out millions and millions of ballots. They're trying to cheat. They're going to try to steal this. This is what he said in an interview with Laura Ingraham, right around the same time as those programs that we made. This is September 1st, 2020, clip 6.
President, the biggest risk we have, I have to say, is this whole crazy thing where they're sending out 80 million ballots to people that don't even know what a ballot is. They're getting them. They're sending them all over.
Applications for
voting.
Who's
sending them? Where are they sending them? They're sending 80 million ballots to everybody. And there's tremendous cheating going to go on, as sure as you're sitting there. And all you have to do is look at the recent races that happened. It's the single biggest problem that there is.
See, he's on to them. And of course he's fighting against it. Of course, we'll see soon enough who wins. We have our views on that, as you well know. But he knows what they're up to. He knew going in. One of our listeners sent me this TED Talk that Van Jones put out. And as the listener was pointing out, isn't it amazing? Here's another Democratic operative. He appears on CNN quite often. He was the one that was crying on Monday because Trump's now finally out of office. He's the one in 2016, by the way, that called Trump's victory a white lash. This happened because we're racist. This was a white lash against Barack Obama. And here he is a week before the election, and he's concerned about a coup attempt. Certainly not from the radical left. He's concerned that President Trump, after the votes trickle on in, that President Trump would fight against it and perhaps even use that old dusty document, the Constitution, to prevail in the end, or perhaps the courts. He's really a proponent of the will of the people, the majority, the mob rule. If we can show that we have majority support, never mind the Constitution. Here's Van Jones from a TED Talk on October 26th, just 1 week before Election Day, clip 7.
Please pay attention to this talk. I'm going to teach you how to stop a coup.
Okay, so he goes into some of the very same things that Axios brought out in the New York Times and so on. He's again, trying to prime us for what was about to happen. Here's clip 8.
It turns out that one of the main safeguards of U.S. democracy is not in the Constitution at all. It's not in the law at all. It's actually just a little tradition. It's a little custom. And yet, this one voluntary gesture is one of the main reasons that you almost never have riots and bloodshed and strife after a U.S. election. What I'm talking about is a concession speech.
So you've got to concede, and you've got to concede, as we've learned over the past week, when the media tell you to. If they decide that you've lost, even if other states haven't completed their counts, even if nothing has been certified, if the media says you lost, then you either concede or you're going to cause riots. You're going to be responsible for destruction on a mass scale. The concession speech. It's not in the law, as Van Jones says. It's not in the Constitution. It's just a little tradition that we have. You better concede. That's a safeguard for democracy. And if you don't do it, you may be delegitimizing the American democracy. Here's clip 9.
It's after the advisors come and the media tells them, look, you're not going to get enough votes to be able to hit that magic number of 270 electoral college votes.
Notice that he says there the concession happens after the advisors come and the media tells him. The media tells him. Now, these Democrat operatives, and again, it works both ways. You've got the media constantly coaching them, and then they were coaching the media. This is what you've got to be preparing the viewer for. Don't let the other side get anywhere near the point of declaring victory on election night. You have got to tell America. You have got to convince America that this is going to be a long, drawn-out process. That is, until the media declare it. Then it's got to be done. Bang, 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 bang. He's got to concede. I mean, we got the announcement at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday. He should have conceded by noon. That's what they're saying. And the pressure, as I say, it's coming from every direction. intense pressure to cave in to what the media tell you to do. What did the New York Times tweet out last week? This election is decided when we say so. And on Saturday, November 7th, they said so. They had made their decision. And so here come all of these Democrats now, these leading Democrats now, insisting that if this president does not concede, he's destroying the electoral process of the United States. Listen to Bernie Sanders from yesterday, clip 18.
People lose close elections. Hillary Clinton lost a close elections. Other people have lost close elections. And what you do in America historically is you say, hey, I fought as hard as I could. I want to thank my supporters. I congratulate the winner. Let's go forward with a transition we all love in our country, and we want the best for America. What he is doing right now is delegitimizing our electoral process and American democracy.
Now, did Hillary Clinton do any of what he just said there in 2016? Did she say, you know what, look, it was a close election. I really want to thank our supporters. I love America. I want to really lend my support to Donald Trump in this transition process. Did any of them say that? Did Barack Obama say that? Well, he said it, but then look at what he was doing with John Brennan and James Clapper and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Look at what he was doing behind the scenes, undermining democracy, sabotaging the incoming presidency. All of them with this treasonous behavior, and it continues. And then they have the audacity to lecture Donald Trump about conceding. He went on to say that, you know, it takes guts to concede. Clip 19.
You got to have the guts to sometimes say, you know what, I put up a fight, I lost, congratulations to the winner, let's go on.
And Bernie Sanders certainly has the guts to quit. He beat Hillary in 2016, and he beat Biden this time. But they cheated him. And he was told to submit to the intense pressure to capitulate. And so he did. And I guess he sees that as something that's courageous. Donald Trump's cut from a different cloth. He knows what's going on. I think he's called Bernie Sanders the greatest loser. The greatest, by that he means, you know, that he takes it so well. He won't fight. He was cheated twice. He should have been the nominee twice. Can you believe it? It takes guts. It takes guts to sometimes say, I put up a fight and I lost. Well, he would know. Listen to what Jim Sciutto. Jim Sciutto is the CNN commentator. He's the one that in 2017, in January, when Comey and company were trying to get, they were trying to get the Steele dossier to get some traction in the media. And CNN, you'll remember, they were the ones to run with it following the BuzzFeed revelation. And it was Jim Sciutto who came on the air very serious and said, we've got this dossier and the Trump administration has been made aware of it by the Obama people, by the outgoing Obama people. It's very serious, very serious. Now, here's Jim Sciutto the other day, yesterday, I guess it was, about why it's so important for President Trump to concede right now, right now. Clip 14.
There are sitting members of Congress who were around in their positions at the time of 9/11. And the 9/11 Commission report specifically cited the shortened transition after the 2000 election for having an impact on national security. I'm quoting here, it hampered the new administration in identifying, recruiting, clearing, and obtaining Senate confirmation of key appointees. The fact is, we have experience for how shortened transitions make a difference in national security.
That's an astounding quote to me. I didn't know some of that history from the 9/11 report. But that's Jim Sciutto saying that when Gore contested it in 2000, 37 days, he's trying to get it overturned for 37, and that hampered the transition process and may have contributed to the attack of 9/11. Now, he's using this to say Donald Trump should concede. I take that report to mean that Al Gore is the cause of 9/11. This is breaking news. Al Gore didn't concede. Next thing that you know, we were attacked on 9/11. Because, well, the Bush administration was unprepared. They didn't have a long enough transition. How about that? That's CNN. Don't believe me. Believe what CNN had to say. So this is where we are. If you don't concede, President Trump, there's going to be another 9/11. Well, are you saying Al Gore's responsible for the first one? Never mind that. If you don't concede, you could be bringing a 9/11 on the United States. See, they have to concede now. Now, Van Jones went through it in more detail than Axios. As I say, he's going into the, you know, there could be more votes that come in after the fact. But what if President Trump doesn't concede? Well, I mean, this is something that's quite terrifying. Play clip 10.
At that moment, you don't think about this, but the fate of the entire republic is in the hands of a single politician and their willingness to walk out there and stand in front of their family and stand in front of the cameras and stand in front of the whole nation and say, I am conceding the race voluntarily.
See, that, like Bernie Sanders says, that takes courage to quit. It takes courage to walk out there and say, you know, look, I gave it a good fight, but I just couldn't quite get over the hump. But what if you don't concede? Here's clip 11.
So what if a losing candidate simply refused to concede? What if there is no concession speech? Well, what could happen might terrify you. I think it should.
It's terrifying. And I think it should. Well, you heard Jim Sciutto. It could be another 9/11. This is terrifying. We're entering into a terrifying territory, they're now saying, because President Trump would like to see a recount in Wisconsin and Georgia, and because he wants to go to court in Pennsylvania and Michigan, because of all of these eyewitnesses that are talking about illegal and fraudulent behavior that they witnessed, that they experienced, that they were on the other side of. Can't do any of that, they're now saying. They don't. Why are they so worried and concerned about these lawsuits and about the President Trump and about President Trump refusing to concede at this point? They're worried because of what could be exposed. That's the thing. And I went into that in some detail yesterday. You can go back and listen to that program again. But you can see now why the pressure is so intense for him to give up, because they want him to quit before more of this fraudulent activity is exposed. The moment that he quits, that's when the lawsuits end. That's when some of those conservative sites, and there's not very many of them, that are really exposing this. It's like I told Sam yesterday. You know, we've got to preview some of these court briefings because CNN's not going to cover it. CNN's too busy saying if he doesn't quit, there's another 9/11 right around the corner. Listen to what Jim Clyburn, this is the representative from, I think, South Carolina, just yesterday, clip 20.
I'm beginning to see what happened in Germany back in the 1930s. I never thought that could happen in this country. How do you elect a person president, then all of a sudden give him the authority to be dictator? That's what we're teetering on here. That's what Hitler did in Germany.
That's a U.S. congressman. Amazingly enough, that's a U.S. congressman saying those kinds of things. A couple more clips just to conclude with Van Jones. This was, a TED Talk on October 26th, just a week before the U.S. election, clip 12.
Instead of conceding, a losing candidate could launch a ferocious fight to grab power anyway, or to hold on to power anyway. In the courts, yes, but also in the state houses, electoral college, even in Congress. They could file, for instance, dozens of lawsuits attempting to block the counting of millions of mail-in ballots, saying they should all be thrown out. They're all fraudulent. Then they could demand that the states refuse to certify the election because of all this alleged fraud or interference from a foreign power.
Okay, everything that he's describing there is well within the president's right, whether he's contesting something in court or, you know, he touched on the Electoral College and then how it goes on to Congress to be made official, and how that there are certain constitutional avenues here that, while it may not have been used in 100, 150 years, is still there in the Constitution. But this is Van Jones. He comes out with all the, you know, the favorites from the AOC wing. We've got to get rid of the Electoral College. You know, we've got to initiate some reform. That's why Chuck Schumer the other day said that, you know, if we get those two runoffs in Georgia, if Biden gets in, and then we flip those two seats in Georgia, we've got 50, and then we've got the deciding vote in Kamala, and then we change America. Fundamental transformation. We've heard this before. Barack Obama was promising that in 2008. And like my father said, for 8 years, he was virtually unchecked. No one stood up to him. No one stood up to the radical left. Everybody just submitted to it. Everybody just said, oh boy, if the New York Times says it, then we better go along. We certainly don't want the New York Times or CNN to say anything bad about us. Listen to Van Jones again. This is the last clip from that TED Talk, talking about why the president should concede. And he's saying all this before we even know the results of the election. The playbook, this was the plan. This was their last hope, to just steal it outright, to steal it out in the plain of day. And if they can't get away with that, then they've got plenty of ammunition to say, well, boy, we've been taken over by Adolf Hitler. We're being ruled by a tyrant, a dictator. This is clip 13.
The idea that an incumbent president should concede honorably and graciously and ensure a peaceful transfer of power rather than trying to use every trick in the book to hang on to power, that's an American value too.
Yeah, you should just quit. It takes guts. I mean, that's real courage. That's American values. Tell that to Al Gore. Tell that to Hillary Clinton. Tell that to Stacey Abrams. The hypocrisy here, it couldn't be any thicker. These are people that, as a matter of routine, will not accept the results of an election that goes against them. They just won't do it. And then as soon as the media make their ridiculous, premature declaration, as they did last Saturday, here comes the herd, trying to run roughshod right over the Trump administration, trying to force every supporter into congratulating Joe Biden, vice president or president-elect Joe Biden. I want to go back to September now. I've played you the Axios clips. I've read to you what the New York Times said at the time. They were preparing us. They were, like Cheryl Atkinson said, they were priming us. They were priming us for what would happen come election night and beyond. Here's a CNN commentator, Fareed Zakaria, on September 13th, clip 23.
All of us need to start preparing for a deeply worrying scenario on November 3rd. It's not some outlandish fantasy, but rather the most likely course of events based on what we know today. On election night, Donald Trump will be ahead significantly in a majority of states, including the swing states that will decide the election. Then over the next few days, mail-in ballots will be counted and the numbers could shift in Joe Biden's favor. But will Trump accept that outcome? Will America?
That's just amazing, isn't it? Looking at that now after the fact. They all laid it out there for us. And of course, he added in there that, well, because of the pandemic, you've got you know, you've got Democrats that are going to opt for the mail-in voting. And they had been working their mail-in voting fraud scheme for several election cycles leading up to, well before the pandemic, Pennsylvania, they were working on, you know, relaxing those election laws last year before anyone even heard of COVID-19. But then when COVID comes, I mean, that's the perfect cover. Well, of course we can't go to the polls because I'll die if I do that. So we've got to have all of these mail-in ballots. Pretty amazing. That clip, by the way, it was on September 13th. And then 5 days after that, Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. And so that's a separate tack here that we can comment on in just a second. But here's Fareed on CNN talking about all of these scenarios and what it's going to do to America and how are we going to get out of this national nightmare. I mean, and what if President Trump does contest it? How is this going to be fixed? Now, this commentary is before, it's 5 days before Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. So listen to his conclusion in this segment, clip 24.
The second and decisive force will be John Roberts. If this type of scenario unfolds, it will end up in court. Ordinarily, this would not get to the Supreme Court. The Constitution is crystal clear that it is the states and the states alone that get to determine their electors. But the Supreme Court abandoned its restraint in 2000 with Bush v. Gore. That means a disputed election could quickly move up to the Supreme Court again, where Roberts will be pivotal as both Chief Justice and the swing vote. So it might all come down to this. One man, John Roberts, will have the power to end a looming catastrophe and save American democracy.
And of course, at that time, there were nine justices, including RBG. And he is the swing vote. And if we after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, then they did have that case from Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, the one in Pennsylvania in particular, that worked its way up to the Supreme Court. And it was John Roberts who sided with the liberal wing. And it was a 4-4 vote because Amy Coney Barrett hadn't been put in place yet. She hadn't been confirmed. But before that clip I just played, Fareed says, look, there's two powerful forces here that can ensure that this doesn't turn into a nightmare. And he's a radical leftist. And he said the two powerful forces, number one was the media. The media that has to prepare the American electorate for a long, drawn-out process. And then two, the second powerful force is John Roberts. It could come down to one vote in the Supreme Court. And of course, at that time, he speaks pretty confidently that Roberts will do the right thing. And then 5 days later, wouldn't you know it, Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies. And before Election Day, a week before Election Day, despite the angry protests coming from the radical left, President Donald Trump, together with the senators in Congress, they confirm Amy Coney Barrett. And this is what he said early on in the process. I think this was before he nominated her. But he made it clear, just days after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, that her seat was going to be filled and that it would happen before Election Day. This is clip 25.
I think this will end up in the Supreme Court, and I think it's very important that we have nine justices. I think this scam that the Democrats are pulling, it's a scam. The scam will be before the United States Supreme Court, and I think having a 4-4 situation is not a good situation. If you get that, I don't know that you'd get that. I think it should be 8-0 or 9-0, but just in case it would be more political than it should be, I think it's very important to have a ninth justice.
So here again, it just makes you think about some of the comments my father's made over the years about God setting them up, right? And because so few people are standing against it. And then the mob comes out and says, this is the way it has to be. This is the way it has to go. He has to concede. He has to give in. He has to surrender. It has to be a President Biden administration. It just has to be. We've decided. Well, what does God have to say? Someone sent me this clip. Quite a few of these clips I've gotten today. The Van Jones bit come from one of our listeners. This is from our favorite program on Sky News Australia, Alan Jones's show. He's discussing the final outcome of this contested election with Corey Bernardi. And here's what Bernardi had to say, clip 17.
It's absolutely got to go to the Supreme Court. I think there are still live and active races, irrespective of the court outcomes. In some of them, I think they've called them far too early. But ultimately, I think the next president is going to be decided by the rulings of the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's according to Sky News Australia, some coverage that, you don't hear much of over here. Well, whether in the U.K., I mean mainly the United States. But we'll see where that this goes. There's some details yet to be sorted out, and we'll find those out, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead. But for now, I'll leave you with that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.